It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a resilient group of dancers.
Good scene. With their matching outfits and dance routines, they bring joy and inspiration to people, even after an unthinkable tragedy. Christina Leffring brings us their story.
The day of Muskego's Christmas parade has been cold, rainy, and pretty gloomy. Yet Main Street in this small city in Waukesha County is lined with grandparents, parents, and of course kids, waiting for the parade. Especially the Milwaukee Dancing Grannies. For almost 40 years, the troupe of grandmothers dancing and waving pom-poms in formation have been a highlight of holiday parades across eastern Wisconsin. But last year, three members and one member's husband were killed when Daryl Brooks drove his vehicle through the Waukesha Christmas Parade. The Grannies have always been a fan favorite, but in light of last year's tragedy, crowds have celebrated their return with standing ovations.
I think everybody on the entire street was standing and clapping. So it was a bit emotional, and it was really wonderful to see.
It actually makes me cry every time I see them, just with everything that happened. And they're so cute, and it just breaks my heart still. And it brings me joy to see them at all the parades.
They're fantastic. We love them every time. I want to be a dancing granny someday.
It's really a lot harder than it looks.
That's Doreen Lopez, who joined just last January.
Well, it's not for the faint of heart. It's a lot of work. It's a big commitment.
Dancing Grannies rehearse at least once a week. Each member is expected to perform in at least two-thirds of the parades the group is scheduled for, which in the winter could mean two or three parades in one weekend.
You think, you know, you're going to the practices, it's time-consuming, it's hard. And then you do a parade and you think, worth it.
That's Janet Pauly, another new member. Pauly and Lopez were two of several new grannies who joined in January. After the Waukesha attack, the group decided to hold auditions to strengthen their membership.
I knew that when I started, you realize how time-consuming it is, and I thought, I'll try it a year, and I think we're all in it for the long haul.
A few veteran grannies also danced in Muskego. Janice Kramer has been a granny for 19 years. This past year was particularly hard for her. She knew two of the women killed in Waukesha personally and had a series of deaths in her family shortly after, including her husband. But she's still dancing.
So this kind of helps me get through that. It gives me, you know, I can make it. I'm not going to be sitting home in a fetal position somewhere in a corner.
One silver lining is more people have learned about the group. Like Kramer's neighbor, who saw her leave the house in the granny's royal blue winter uniform, trimmed with white fur and a fur hat.
He rolled the window down. He said, "Are you really a dancing granny?" I said, "Yes, I am. You know, I don't dress like this for nothing."
She's struggling to keep up physically, but she's still motivated by the camaraderie.
All the girls were so great, just like these new ones are, just fantastic women. I was thinking I might have to retire because I'm getting older and stuff, but these girls are so much fun. I think I have to stick around maybe for a while longer.
Plus, there are the crowds.
Have you ever walked in a parade? Oh my God, you should do that, because we're old ladies and you get wolf whistles out there. I mean, I'm 75. How many more years am I going to have somebody doing a wolf whistle to us, you know? That's incentive enough.
The group says they've gotten a lot of messages from people who want to join and who can blame them. The group will announce plans for expanding and auditions after their members take a well-deserved break to rest and recuperate.
Christina Leffring brought us that story on the Milwaukee Dancing Grannies. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now to how climate change is affecting trout and what the future holds for these fish with their food, their offspring, stream habitats. We unpack new trends on Wisconsin brook trout and brown trout published recently in the journal Ecosphere. A special shout out to Richard in Two Rivers, who requested more fishing conversations during a caller-only program.
I'm concerned with all the shows I listen to, which are all good, whether it's politics or not. There's never, ever anything on fishing.
Well, call in with your questions about trout streams and what you've noticed. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brian Maitland is a postdoctoral researcher at UW-Madison's Center for Limnology and the paper's corresponding author. Brian, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we dive into your survey data and its findings, can you give us a little primer on brook trout and brown trout and how these fish species look, their tendencies, their range, and habitat in Wisconsin?
Yeah, sure. So the native brook trout and the introduced and now naturalized brown trout, they're two cold water fish species that really rely on cold, clean, natural flowing water, a natural hydrological regime for their growth, for their reproduction, for their long-term persistence. And in Wisconsin, there's an abundance of cold water streams due to plentiful groundwater resources across the region, right? In fact, there's over 13,000 miles of cold water streams, cold water trout streams across the state. And those streams, they all support naturally reproducing fisheries for brook trout and brown trout. And these fish are really highly valued. They contribute millions of dollars annually to local and regional economies, everywhere from fly shops to gas stations. Just think about the iconic Driftless region in southeast Wisconsin that brings in people from all over the world for angling opportunities. And they're also of high cultural importance to Native American tribes and anglers alike. And as you just mentioned, there's also some aesthetic beauty there as well. I mean, brook trout and brown trout, they're very beautiful fish. So if you've ever been out there to catch one, you can gaze into the beautiful lines and stripes that they have, all of them. They're very pretty fish.
So, you know, the names of the fish are similar, but, you know, they aren't. Brown trout are, I understand, more closely related to Atlantic salmon. Brook trout, actually a type of char?
Yeah, you got it. So brook trout are, their species name is Salvelinus fontanellus. So they're a Salvelinus species, which means they're a char. So they're more closely related to lake trout. And then, just like you said, brown trout are an introduced species. They're originally from Europe, and they've been introduced all over the world. In fact, they're one of the most introduced species on the planet, from everywhere from New Zealand to South America and everywhere in between. And yeah, they are Salmo trutta, so they're mostly closely related to the Atlantic salmon. Yep.
So you looked at more than 25 years of survey data to see how Wisconsin's brook and brown trout are being affected by climate change. What have you learned?
Yeah, so, well, the problem here is that we have greenhouse gas emissions that are causing the climate to shift. And in Wisconsin, that means things are getting hotter and wetter. And so, for example, summer air temperatures have gone up by about 2 degrees since the 1950s, and we've seen about a 15% or 4.5-inch increase in average annual precipitation in the state. And these shifts means that we're getting shifts to our trout streams as well. And if these extreme events or these hot weather systems or these big storm events happen during key seasons in a trout's life, they can really hinder their ability to reproduce, to lay eggs, to hatch and grow into adulthood. And so what we did was we took use of the DNR's long-term trout monitoring program, which is a way for the DNR to really keep a finger on the pulse of these populations through time. And we were able to link that up with a lot of local climate information to see how trout populations have been responding to the shifting climate over the past 25 years or so. And there's two big findings that we came away with. And first was that overall, if you look across the state, we found that on average, after accounting for a lot of those year-to-year ups and downs that populations go through, the number of brook trout and streams has been going down, especially since about 2006, while the number of brown trout has been steadily going up. So the next thing we wanted to do was then actually understand how and if some of those shifting climate conditions has contributed to those increases or declines. And we found that indeed, seasonal climate really does influence these populations, but the impact really depends on where you are, which species you are, and where you are in the state. So as a great example, one of the big findings was above normal summer temperatures appear to really hinder brook trout, but help out brown trout. And this is likely due to a fact that native brook trout, they really prefer their water temperatures a little bit cooler than brown trout. So the brown trout can actually deal with those summer water temperatures a bit better than brook trout. But then within species, even within brook trout, we saw some different effects across the state. So, for example, warmer summers were really bad for brook trout in southern Wisconsin, down here at the edge of their range, while effects in northern Wisconsin were much more muted.
Ah, okay. So a lot of variables there to kind of flush out and figure out what's going on. One thing I'm just curious about before we move on, though, is are brook trout found in Lake Superior if they like these really cold water temps? I think of Lake Superior.
Yeah, sure. There is populations all along the northern part of Michigan and Wisconsin up there in Lake Superior, and they're doing well up there. In fact, a lot of the brook trout populations are doing better than they are in some of the southern parts of the state. And again, that's because that's further away from the edge of their distribution. So up there, on average, temperatures haven't really got as warm as they have down south. So when we're thinking about temperature and brook trout, they're seeming to do a little bit better up north.
Okay, so it is temperature that is a major influence, but you've also talked about early winter thaws and these intense rain events hurting these species. What are you finding there?
Yeah, and this was one of the big ones, and this is one of the more universal effects that we found on both species, and this really relates to how much seasonal precipitation we get. So across the board, we found that heavy winter rains and heavy spring rains result in precipitous declines in natural reproduction for both species. And this is really because if we get these lots of precipitation that turns into high stream flows during these seasons, they can scour out those gravel beds where the trout eggs are incubating in the winter. And then in the spring, it can overstress those newly hatched baby fish. So if we get lots of rain coming down during these seasons, which we're increasingly getting, especially in southeast Wisconsin during these seasons, it can really be potentially bad for the long-term sustenance or persistence, I should say, of populations in some of these streams.
And that's not a predictable thing. I mean, that can be really scattered, those rain events, and whereas perhaps warming water temperatures are more of an incremental variable?
They are, but one thing that we're going to be seeing with in the future, one thing that we do have a good idea on, especially for a lot of the research coming out of the Wisconsin Initiative for Climate Change Impacts, is we're going to see more extreme events occur. So there's going to be more seasons, and there's going to be more seasons in succession where we have some of these extreme events. So for example, if you have one summer that's very hot, followed by a potentially very cold fall, followed by a very wet winter and spring, that can hit a population at multiple times during their life cycle that can really put heavy stresses on those populations and potentially allow them not to reproduce the following year. And if you do that a couple years in a row, that's where we get to those population declines and collapses.
Mm. UW-Madison postdoctoral researcher Brian Maitland studies the intersection of Midwest trout streams and climate change effects. Call in with Wisconsin Trout questions, what you wonder about the resiliency, the sensitivity of these fish in the face of our warming planet. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Climate change is adding stress to river ecosystems in Wisconsin and beyond, and the brook trout and the brown trout can feel it and are reacting. We explore new research on our state's trout streams and what to expect in the future. And fishers, let's hear from you at 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison Center for Limnology. Postdoc researcher Brian Maitland is our guide. Let's bring on a caller, Jeff in Delafield. Jeff, hi, what would you like to ask?
Yes, good morning. My comment or question is, in modern agriculture, we see an increased use of plastic drain tiles. You drive around the winter, and any farm that or land that doesn't already have drain tiles seems to be adding drain tiles. So I doubt that there's much land that isn't tiled in the state anymore. So does that have an appreciable impact on flow rates and streams? And if so, why do we continue to allow that practice?
Jeff, thank you. Yes, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I have to say I'm really not the best person to respond to that. But what I can say is that anything that we can do to reduce the effects of flooding into our streams. And so, for example, when we do get those heavy downpours, anything that we can do to reduce that flooding into streams is going to not only benefit the fish communities that live there, but it'll also benefit the human communities that live on the banks of those systems, right? So things like increasing riparian habitat, that can be a huge way to buffer some of that water flowing in quickly across the surface of the landscape, just the same way that mangroves do on coastal ecosystems. When a big storm comes in, they'll buffer some of that energy, and riparian habitat, really strong riparian habitat can help do that in some of our stream ecosystems as well.
What about the impact of dams and dam removal? Does that affect these fish?
Yeah, also a great question. When we think about connectivity, one thing that we always want to do is increase connectivity on the landscape. And one thing that we can do is, the bigger problem is, I mean, dams are an issue, but the other one is stream crossings and road culverts and stuff like this. And so one thing that we can do is we can go out there and fix poorly functioning road culverts and stream crossings. And what that can do is that can really ensure that trout can access thermally suitable habitat during some periods that some of their stream gets too hot. They can move around the landscape. So improving that connectivity can go a long way to building resiliency into our populations for the long term.
Let's take another call. Jim is with us from Wausau. Jim, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm just wondering about like river flooding, how that affects trout streams, because I do know from experience that there's a river, Spring Brook, and flooded back in 2006, and it's never been the same.
As a trout fisher, what have you, Jim, while you're on the line here, what have you noticed? What have you observed through the years?
I used to fish that regularly when I was a kid. And, you know, all the gravel bed were destroyed, and like the pH level of the stream went haywire, you can't even catch a brook trout out of there anymore.
Jim, thank you for the question and the observations. What is that impact of river flooding? Can it recover afterward, years later, Brian?
Yeah, great question. So I'll first say there's definitely a lot of other local factors that go into how a particular stream in a particular part of the state will respond to these things. But on the whole, this is where one of the big takeaways from our study was the fact that it really depends on when some of these events happen, that it can be detrimental or positive for trout population. So a good example is if you remember the big floods that happened back in August of 2018 in Southeast Wisconsin and the Driftless, that many folks will remember, those floods happen in August. They happen during the summer period. And we actually see from the data that the next couple years, there was actually big boosts in trout populations in that part of the world. And that's because if we get these floods during the summer, it can actually increase access. It can open up more habitat to fish. It can allow them to find more food. It can also allow them to find additional spawning habitat that they might not get in a very dry year. But then conversely, as I mentioned earlier, if we get these big floods coming in the winter and spring, they can scour out those gravel beds and take out some of those eggs that are incubating under the gravel, or in the spring, they can knock out those newly hatched fry. So it really depends on when some of these things are happening and if they happen successfully over a couple years. And then the backside of that question too is, can these systems recover? Surely they can. Rivers and streams have been flooding for time immemorial. So they can, but it also depends, like I said, on a lot of other local factors that are happening in your watershed.
Brian Maitland with us, postdoc researcher, UW-Madison Center for Limnology. Let's go to Travis and Nina with a question. Travis, hi.
Hi, morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I had a question. I guess it was more of a comment. I found it curious that the brook trout population is more affected in the Southwest, considering the significantly different hydrology, being that in the northern part of the state, I believe the groundwater is more of a function of shallower groundwater, which would be impacted more by the atmosphere versus the hydrology in the southwestern part of the state.
Brian, can you flesh that out with hydrology? What do you see there?
Question, and it's actually something we couldn't get directly to in our study. One thing that we are trying to develop, and there's ongoing research to get to this point, is building statewide hydrological models that can actually incorporate not only surface water flow that comes down from precipitation, but can also link that up to groundwater information and how groundwater contributes to streams. So in our study, we really had to focus on the climate effects. We had to focus on air temperature and precipitation and how those things might be affecting trout. A next level in this study, a next level in this research program is really going to try to figure out how groundwater is influencing those trends as well. So it's ongoing research, and I unfortunately don't have a good answer for you yet on that one.
We only have a few seconds left, but where do you like to fish?
I can't let that information be known, but I will say that I have had some fantastic times fishing in the Driftless region. I do love it down there, and I've also had some great times up in northern Wisconsin on some lakes and small ponds. So the great thing about this state is there's, like I said, there's over 13,000 miles of cold water trout streams, and you can go wet your line anywhere and probably have a good time.
Oh, Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Kate. Thanks again.
Brian Maitland is a postdoctoral researcher at UW-Madison Center for Limnology. We have a link, by the way, to his journal article in Ecosphere on climate conditions and Midwestern stream trout. You can find it at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.